Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome. You bring news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this edition of the program, we will bring you one of our oldest and dearest friends. He's opening a new show that's going to be awesome because all of his stuff is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, reintroduce you to, I think, the person who's been on this show the most, Eric DeCamps. Welcome back.
Thanks, man. I think I was your first original online guest.
Yeah, somewhat.
A podcast,
I mean,
that yeah,
was like
yeah.
A
billion years
BC.
Ago. Yeah. How you doing? How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing okay. Looking forward to my new reincarnation of the show, of the Pure Magic, a performance of contemporary conjuring.
Now, this was something that has had many different forms. It is coming back, and where is it coming back? We'll get into more details a little bit later. But
okay.
But where are you going to be, and when are you going to be there?
Well, I'm going to be in Chicago, in the great city of Chicago. And we open next Friday, which is October 19th, and we're going to do a short run, the 19th, 20th, and 21st, and four shows. It's a Friday evening, the 19th, two shows on Saturday, and one matinee show on Sunday. So we're looking forward to it. It's an exciting adventure for me. I've always wanted to work Chicago.
Now, what has led you to this particular show? Is this the same as the Pure Magic show?
How much is it different? No, it's the Pure Magic show. Where it's it's not a reinvention or anything, but it is the Pure Magic show, the one I did here in New York and in the Metropolitan Room that I've done at in Austin, Texas, and that I've done in a couple other places up in Niagara Falls. It's the same show. So if you've seen the show, you're gonna love to see it again. but it's the first time going to Chicago. You know, Chicago has such a rich history on close-up magic, and it's always been my dream to go to that great town and to do my show and let the guys that are there see what I'm doing.
Windy
you know?
City,
the Windy City,
city with the big shoulders, the Toddling Town.
The Toddling Town, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
As Sinatra sang.
It is certainly, it's a great city. I've been there. I've been working on this for about 4 years on and off, trying to figure out a space to do my show in, because my show is a fairly small show. You know, I can do a house of 100, 150. That's about tops, and depending on the sight lines. But I couldn't find anything that made sense. And then I was there in February, and I got together with a friend of mine by the name of Gabe Fuhari. You know Gabe.
Of course, yeah.
And Gabe has just moved in at the time. He just moved into a new location for his gallery, you know, Potter Gallery, Potter and Potter.
And Gabe, for those who might not know, is probably most involved or at least his name pops up the most in terms of general magic interest in the auction world. He is the master of all these priceless artifacts.
That without a doubt, and he has a huge collection. He's done the Jay Marshall collection. He's done the Herb Zarro collection, and now he's going to be doing in 2 weeks, the week after my show, he's going to be handling the collection of Charles Reynolds, the legendary Charles Reynolds. So that's, and I saw the catalog. It's incredible stuff in there. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So anyway, he moved into a bigger space. It's about twice the size of the space he had before. And it's a really neat space. And I kind of looked at it and looked around, and I thought, this is a great space. I says, you know what? And we got to talking, and he said, well, I would love to host your show. So we talked about it. We worked it out, and the rest is history, so to speak. Oh, soon to be history, as I should say.
Sure.
Yeah. So It's an exciting thing. I can't wait to see the guys over there because they have such a talented crew of guys in Chicago, magic-wise.
Now,
very knowledgeable
a little
group.
About that history, that Chicago.
Well, of course, if you think about it, that's where Ed Marlowe held court for so many years, and he had so many friends and influenced so many people like Simon Aronson, David Solomon, John Bannon, and of course a buddy of mine by the name of Bill Malone. That's just to name a few. And it's a different style, you know, than what I do, but I think they're going to like what I do because, you know, what I do is I specialize in classical magic or reinterpretation of the classics, and I think they're gonna appreciate what I have to say and what I do, without a doubt.
Who would you say is your biggest influence personally?
Well, I have a lot of influences. I mean, you know, it's
one
weird.
Big one. Just name.
Oh, I would have
it's
to say
blank style. Biggest influence. Go. Name one. Name one. Go. Name one now.
Okay. What are you, Oprah?
Go. I don't think
if I were to say one person in close up magic, I would have to say Renee LeBond.
What? And obviously, Renee LeBond is not only an inspiring figure, but an absolute master of his craft. What would be the one element for which you would hope to emulate the most from Renee?
Well, Renee is, you know, he'll never be duplicated. There's no question about that. I mean, the guy.
No, but you could take an element. Like, no one will ever be Renee. However, you could take an element of Renee and hope to, you know, get yourself to the point where you could have Renee-esque skills, and that maybe one element. But
you haven't seen the show, but in the show, I pay tribute to Renee LeBond. I do a piece that I have his permission to do, and I do it, and I try to channel as much as I can from the times that I've spent with him, and he mentored me and influenced me tremendously. And when I first met him was in 1991 in Lausanne, Switzerland, when I was a representative for the Society of American Magicians in the FISM contest. And he was a hired act, and it was the first I had seen Renee on video before, and I thought he was marvelous, of course. But to see him live in front of an audience and what he can do to an audience, I had never seen a close-up performer at that level before that can just be such a tremendous artist with such drama, using drama, just strictly drama, to get his message across and his emotions. I've never seen anybody as a close-up artist to do that in that way. He's very unique in that style. I mean, I've seen other masters, you know, of course, you know, Juan Tamariz is a friend and he's phenomenal, but he's a different style. Yeah. He uses a lot of comedy and, you know, I mean, you
he's
know.
He's an active guy. Juan Tamariz is running around. He's
yeah, exactly. But he'll melt your mind.
He's crazy.
Yeah, he'll just melt your mind. But
I'll tell you, and I don't know if anyone has worked, and this is not even just in magic. I think in every form of art, I don't know if anybody has melted language barrier as an art form like Juan Tamariz. Like, if there's one thing that I think, you know, especially for English audiences, mm-hmm. there's just an element of his act that is not only integral to his character, but also I would suspect fairly mechanically integral to his act, you know, into his pacing, into the methods,
Tamariz is probably the most devious magician I've ever met, I've ever seen perform. He works every element, and in that, you know, he was influenced, and one of his teachers was Tony Slidini, and Slidini, I like to think that he learned a lot of that and applied it to his personality, the way Slidini would do his thing. Because Slidini, you would go out to dinner. I worked 5 years in the same nightclub with Slidini. He worked for 5 years at a club called Mostly Magic here in the city. And when I say city, I mean New York City and, of course, Greenwich Village. Right. And I got to share the stage with him for 5 years and got to study him and watch him work in front of real people, not just magicians. I mean, yes, musicians would come and flock and see him, but going out afterwards and hanging out with him and going to dinner and stuff like that, he would set up things and be prepared to do magic to look like it was completely impromptu, yet he was way ahead of everybody. Yeah. And Tamarice uses that same concept in his own way that fits his personality and characteristic, and he's a very good actor. Rene Lavande is a phenomenal actor. He's a phenomenal actor and a dramatist. I mean, in 1997, I was invited to go and perform at a convention in Bogota, Colombia, and by the leading magician there, a gentleman by the name of Gustavo Loria. He's like the David Copperfield of Colombia. Yes. And he's a good guy and he's an old friend of mine. And he told me he had booked Rene. And I said, you know, I've never seen Rene perform without a translator. It would be great to see him to perform without a translator and just be in the audience and watch. Because what they did was he organized public shows, public close-up shows and theater and stage shows for this conference. And it was really kind of cool. He had a theater and they set it up and they had a tremendous lineup. And Rene was on the lineup. And, of course, he closed the show. And
for those listeners who don't know you, that you – And Rene are native Spanish speakers. So
yes. He's from Argentina. My family comes from the Dominican Republic, and you know, like I said, I met him in '91, and he stayed at my house in '92 for about
both
a week.
Both countries, for the record, speak Spanish.
Yes, slightly. But anyway, or a version of Spanish. They actually speak Spanish. They speak Castellano. But anyway,
in the same way that people from London and Birmingham, Arkansas, speak English.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. Okay. That's probably good, especially when you talk about my Spanish. But anyway, he invited me to go, and the reason why I accepted Gustavo's invitation was because I knew that I could get to see Rene, and I really wanted to spend some time with him. So I go down there, and I get to the theater, and there he is hanging out, and we visited for a while, and the show started, and they had some great acts: Aldo Colombini, a gentleman from Allen, Fernando Chiops, Carl Cloutier, and it was a long list of great artists, and they made a full show. And Rene comes out. This is for lay audience, man. This is for a complete lay audience, okay? And he says, he comes out and he does a short version of the breadcrumbs, opens up with a story, does a short version of breadcrumbs, does another story, one card trick, two card tricks, and closes with two stories. Devastates the audience. The theater goes bonkers. Of lay audience, okay? And they go bonkers. They're throwing roses on stage at him. And it was like, I'm sitting there like flabbergasted. I've never seen anything like this. And it was just a tremendous experience. And and another life lesson. You know what I mean? I'm a strong believer that the true student of magic can learn so much more by watching a good performer perform than just going to a magic lecture and just, you know, and do a show and tell type of lecture. I think now that is not an affirmation for you to go ahead and watch a performer and steal his act. That's not what I'm saying. No. What I'm saying is you go, you look at it, then go back home and analyze why that performer, why that magician chose the pieces that he chose, why he put them in the order that he put them in, and how did he present them? How did he hook the audience to keep them engaged and interested in what he was doing? You know, so that's a huge, huge thing for me. I've always analyzed that. And I find that if people do that, you'll do yourself a lot more service because you can analyze it and figure it out for yourself than you just sitting around and learning how to, you go into a lecture where you just learn how to trick and just parrot the guy that was at the lecture. You know what I mean?
All right. Now let me go a little bit off topic.
Sure.
Let's talk about a performer who you've had a lot of contact with through his career. He obviously was just in the news, speaking of David Blaine and his electrified stunt. He had mentioned in something that we ran on the blog last week about how this, kind of an intimation that this would be, you know, the last of his super dangerous kind of stunts, and that mm-hmm. his next priority was to do a show that he could tour around the country or the world. You know, this is something that we've heard a lot about. He's done mm-hmm. some live performances in the last probably year, 2 years. Do you think that there is a career, and by career I mean something that wouldn't seem just like a sideline to how we think of him now, that he could be the guy who comes to your town and performs magic, or is Blaine always going to be thought of as somebody who does stuff on television?
I don't know. I mean, David can perform magic. He can definitely do magic. There's not a question about that. I know that he's done a lot of private events. He's done a lot of high-end events. His pay grade is really up there, so I don't know how many people can afford him.
I'll tell you what, and this is not to say anything he said was not true when he was talking about doing the show, or the electrified stunt, and
right.
all the reasons why viscerally he wanted to do it, and intellectually he wanted to do it, and his inspirations for doing it. Unmentioned in any of those was, I'm sure, the not insignificant check that a company like Intel would pay for a 72-hour event like that, featuring prominently their Ultrabooks. I can't imagine what mm-hmm. he got money-wise for that. It's got to be.
I'm sure he did, but you don't know what the contracts read and what the stipulations. I mean, to produce that, sometimes you'd be surprised at how some of this stuff works. You have a Vegas act, and you'll hear that he makes $100 million. But in that $100 million, he's got to produce the show.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's his payroll. They don't want to know. Here's your lump sum, and you subcontract and do what you ever got to do. So I don't know.
Okay, but
what
this isn't a show.
Was.
I mean, this.
No,
was...
it's not a show, but it was a huge event.
Was a big
event. There's a lot of permits, and I'm sure there's a lot of issues getting all that power there and making sure that it was safe. To make it, not the part where he's in there, because I'm sure there was some danger, definitely some danger involved with that.
He got zapped in the face. We had a thing.
And there was ozone. There was ozone issues and everything. Yeah, and everyone thinks that it's not going to hurt him, but he got whacked. And to stay up 72 hours, I mean, that's not an easy gig.
No, listen. Matter what he got paid, there are probably easier ways to do it. He could go to Dubai and do four private shows and probably make somewhere in that vicinity. Although maybe not Dubai. Magic has kind of looked at differently in the Middle East.
Well,
he might not leave Dubai if he went to go do four parties.
Oh yeah, they might make him king too. Who knows?
It's a fine line between murder and kingdom. In that part of our beautiful world.
I know he's been working on a show. I mean, that's the rumor's been for at least a decade. But it's not an easy thing, to put together a show and I don't know, but I know he can do magic. I know he's a good magician. I know he is a friend, and I like him a lot. And I think he's good for magic. I think he's good for magic.
Well, of course,
people
of course.
Might say.
But at this point, who's saying that David Blaine is not good?
A lot of jealous. There's a lot of little jealous guys out there saying, how come it's not me? I can do that.
Okay,
and that's,
that's jealous.
I agree.
The guy who has the crowd of people that isn't good for magic is Angel. People say that Angel's not good for magic. And people, as Dynamo gets more popular, or the next television magician here in the United States.
A friend of mine is going to have a 2-hour TV special next week.
Oh, that would be, of course,
Millionaire Magician. Steve Cohen. Yeah, he's got a 2-hour, and I really hope it's fantastic. I haven't seen. I've known about the show for a little over a year, and he's been working on it. He's been doing a lot of traveling and all this other stuff, and I just hope he hits it right out of the ballpark, man. I really, really do. I got to tell you, the guys who get jealous of other guys because of their success, it's silly. At the end of the day, if he has a successful show, it raises magic up in the perception of the general public, and it's good for all of us. So I just hope he hits it right out of the park. I hope it's a great show.
Well, let me say this. Because there is the sense that, you know, there's only one, you know, there can only be one magic man in the world.
Well, that's what David Copperfield said in his interview to Oprah.
Yeah, but, and I guess he got it from Orson Welles.
Right.
I don't think that's true. I think that the, you know, Copperfield coexisted with Henning, and, you know, Blaine coexisted for a time with Copperfield, and Angels existed entirely during the duration of Blaine's, you know, being a person in the forefront of people's minds as the magic guy.
Right.
So I don't think that. I will say, no matter what you think of that, I will say this. There are, to get a show on television, you need television executives to think that the show will be successful.
Correct.
Television is a very reflexive and reactive medium, and specifically for television execs, whose job is not to get fired. Sure, the job is theoretically to do well for the network, and if that happens, that's great. But everybody in television is really looking to not get fired. Because I would assume being in television is a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, and the winds of change are constantly there. You know,
always. You just got to be on alert for it. If the idea is, unless you totally wow somebody, if there is a stink in the air about magic, that magic is a failure, or magic is over, or people don't like magic, you won't get a show on. You want to know the best way to dispel those myths? Have magic shows on the air. I mean, like, look at what happens. Pawn Stars becomes a big thing. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, every possible way. Eric DeCamps pawns things. You could get 3 episodes today, you know, if you wanted to go pawn all your belongings and pitch it to a network. You know, everything in Alaska. All of a sudden there was a big thing in Alaska. You know, there was Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers. And now everybody wants to shoot something in Alaska. In the Bayou. The Bayou's big now. Storage Wars. Now there's a 50 different storage shows.
So if and you got Honey, show, and on top of all that, you got Honey Boo Boo.
And so Honey Boo Boo. Let's not forget about Dear Honey Boo Boo. If you want to have a magic show on television, the best thing that could possibly happen is somebody else getting a magic show on television and having it do well. Like, that's just
exactly
how television works now. That's how the world is now. So anybody who wishes failure on somebody else, you know, doing television, and I'm sure you'll hear it now with Cohen stuff. Although, I mean, everybody likes Cohen. So I don't know if anybody
can say anything negative
about Cohen. But I'm sure you'll hear it, not to say that anybody doesn't like, you know, Ben Hanlon and Wayne Houchin and James Galea and Billy Kidd, who are coming up on that Discovery
show,
Channel,
yeah.
Breaking Magic. But I'm sure you'll hear people grouse and moan about it. Newsflash. If you want, either you want to have a show on television, or you want other people who you like to be on television, the quickest path to that is other people doing well on the television.
Right.
That's
right. I agree.
I got
I
a
agree.
Little monologue
and,
there.
And I think that happens with anything. I mean, if you have a Broadway show, you know, look at Hollywood. How many superhero movies are out there now? You know, 15 years ago, you got, you know, superhero, 20 years ago, you couldn't get, you know, they couldn't make a superhero movie.
Yeah.
You
All
know,
right.
now,
well, I'll tell you what,
that's
a great segue. We're coming to the end of the interview, and then we've talked about magic enough. Let's talk about comic books, because that's really what we're here to discuss.
Is that what we're here to discuss?
That's really
okay,
what
good
we're
luck
here to
with
discuss.
That.
Of course, your show coming up in Chicago. Again, plug when people can go see that.
Okay, it's going to be at the Potter Gallery. And if you go online, and you'll, I'm sure when we put up this podcast, you'll have a link on it. And you can click on the link, and it's the Potter Gallery, and it's October 19th, 20th, and 21st. And it'll be a great time. Looking forward to it. I've seen some of the people that already bought tickets, and I think if you show up at the show, you're going to be asking for a lot of other autographs there.
Get your tickets now. It's going to be a great time. Eric does not.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. On crappy shows. You put on great shows. It's going to be fantastic. And again, like you said, fantastically, not only a great thriving community for Magic now, but such an amazing legacy in Chicago. And
without a doubt. And
a great venue. Great. Again, the Potter Gallery is just fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful. It's a beautiful venue. It's really a very lovely venue. And the truth is, you're gonna walk into history because he's got so much stuff on display, and you're gonna walk into it, and it's gonna look really cool. But like I said, Matt, you know, Chicago has such a rich history in close-up magic, and I'm really excited about being part of it and to make my little contribution, hopefully.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to name you three movies. I want you to rank them. Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazing Spider-Man. All three came out this summer. I'm sure you saw all three.
Yes, I did.
Rank them in order of your favorite from not your favorite to your favorite.
Okay. I have to remove one of them.
Just from the field of play.
From the field of play, because it's not a comic book movie.
What?
And that's Batman Rises, The Dark Knight Rises.
What do you mean it's not a comic book movie?
It's not a comic book movie, man.
What?
And I'll explain
What's
to you.
What's not a comic book about it?
I'll tell you. It's got comic book characters. It's got characters based on comic books, but it's not a comic book movie. The Avengers is a comic book movie. That is the best comic book movie ever to hit the silver screen.
Okay. Hold on. Give me, because by the way, I'm filing a grievance with you removing this from the field of play. I'm filing a grievance and I'm getting it signed and notarized and I'm filling it out in triplicate and I'm submitting it to the legal. What discredits The Dark Knight Rises from being a comic book movie?
It's based on comic book characters, no question about that.
Okay.
But
that should be it, by the way.
No, that movie did not feel like a. That movie was like a. It was like a James Bond movie. It was fantastic. The script. I mean, at the end of that film, I just sat in my chair, and just was like, I was just like, wow. And it did. It's not like it. It seemed real to you know. It seemed like a reality. Well. The Avengers movies, you know, you check the reality outside, and you go in and you just have fun. You get to see the Hulk. You get to see all the heroes working together.
Comic books are just a form. You know, you can tell many different kinds of stories.
I understand that. We can go back and have the whole discussion about Watchmen.
That's what we're having now.
No, but we can have a whole discussion about Watchmen. And, you know, we've had that discussion a couple of years ago when that movie came out.
I know. I don't know if we recorded it.
No, we never recorded it. I mean, I like the movie more than the comic. And I like the ending of the movie better than the comic book ending. But or the graphic novel.
I think it was great for the movie because it's very, very hard to explain how that book ends in an hour or like, it was a long movie. It was like 3 hours. But like,
yeah.
It's hard to explain
I never saw the director's cut, though. But anyway, I loved Dark Knight Rises. I thought it was phenomenal. But again, it's so raw and so much like a reality thing. While the Avengers just and even the Spider-Man movie, I thought was just okay, to be honest with you. So I just thought it was okay. I walked out saying, "Ah, it's all right." I like the original one better.
The Raimi one.
Yeah, the first Raimi one I thought was much better.
You're crazy. I don't even know why I have you on the podcast.
I don't know either.
Fans. You're removing Batman from play.
What did I just say to you? I thought it was a brilliant film. I'm a huge Batman fan. But I thought it was a brilliant film. I thought Dark Knight was a brilliant film.
Yes.
Except I don't think that, you know, it's like a comic book movie. I think it's more like it was a tremendous drama. I mean, it was so engaging and so well-crafted. And
why
so,
does it have to be one or the other? Why can't it be both?
That's just my feeling.
Why are you putting comic book entertainment in the check your reality at the door ghetto?
No, I just, don't get me wrong. I love the Avengers. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was an upbeat movie. You come out, you're like, yeah. And Dark Knight, you're just like, you question so many things. you know, Dark Knight Rises. I thought it was great. I was concerned at how they were going to do Bane. I thought they did a good job.
Great job.
With it.
You were upset that they didn't make Bane Latino.
Yeah. Although he did have that voice. I mean, he's supposed to have a German voice, right?
He had a voice that I thought was
you know, and I thought it was interesting.
The only problem I had with Bane is that we didn't spend enough time with him. I wanted more time with
him. Yeah, you wanted
and hopefully I guess that was a lot of what they cut out of the movie. All right, I'll tell you what. We'll leave you with this.
Okay.
But I'll give you one more plug for your show on where they can get tickets and what the name of it is, but you have to do it in the Bane voice.
That I can't do.
Come on, just try. Just say the name of the show in the Bane voice.
Pure magic.
That's a terrible. It's pure magic, brother.
Oh, that's
it. You need to go see Eric DeCamps in Chicago. October 19th.
20th and 21.
There we go. All right, Eric, where can people follow you online?
You can follow me at ericdecamps.com. You can follow me on Facebook. And you can also check out the show in the particulars at potterauctions.com.
Always great to talk to you, Eric. Of course, Magic Week in Review. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Stitcher. You can get it anywhere you want it to be. It'll be right up in your ear hole with the quickness. Post-haste, toot sweet, as they might say. iTricks, where you get all your...
I want to hear you say toot sweet in the Bane voice.
Toot sweet, brother.
That's great.
Yeah, so there we go. iTricks, all your daily magic news. Go ahead, get it anywhere you want it. That's the way you need it. And also, I'm Justin Robert Young, Justin R. Young on Twitter. Until next week, bang a gong.
iTricks.com.